Hey, fellow GNTers, those of us who like a little tantra with our gin and gin with our tantra. This episode, we have the first of three parts of our interview with Dr. Sumeet Kumar. Sumeet is a clinical psychologist in South Florida with over 20 years' experience in palliative care. He has worked with thousands of people going through cancer treatment, specializing in end-of-life care, as well as grief and cancer survivorship. He's also practiced Buddhism in the tradition of the Nalanda Mahasiddhas, a soft spot of mine and a soft spot of Daniel's for sure. And he was also raised in a spiritual Hindu household. He has written several books on grief and mindfulness, including the best-selling Grieving Mindfully and The Mindful Path Through Worry and Rumination. He lives in South Florida with his family. There is, unfortunately, a technical caveat for Sumeet's interview episodes. We recorded this in June of 2020, so poor Florida, right? Not only is Sumeet's part of the world wrestling with rising COVID rates, but apparently also tropical storms. So the connection for the interview was a bit wonky. There's some static and some delays, but Daniel and I decided that the topics covered really matter, so we still want to make the interview episodes available. Our apologies, and hopefully you can look past the technical difficulties. Sumeet's insights are worth the effort. Enjoy.
Welcome to Gin and Tantra. Spirituality with a twist. The podcast that takes tantrism, Buddhism, Taoism, Sufism, Kabbalism, Shamanism, Chinese medicinism, and all of the other isms we've been influenced by, and blends them into a tall, crisp, cool cocktail your spirit has been longing for.
I want you to get together.
Now, isn't that refreshing?
I want you to get together.
Hey, Sumeet, thanks for coming on for what we're already hoping and lobbying for will be a long series of episodes where we get to talk about cool spiritual shit. For this one, time allowing, we're doing Fear and Frankel. You and I exchanged some emails about which psychologists you'd like to talk about. And you brought up Viktor Frankl as one of your main psychological influences. And I thought, oh, that's perfect. Because who knows when people will be listening to this, but recording this in June 2020, pandemic time and protest time. And he has so much to say about people facing crisis and adversity. And especially fear and anxiety, which also fit in perfect because Daniel wanted to pick your brain about dealing with fear. And specifically the concept of weaponized fear. Fear being used as a tool of kind of manipulation and, you know, how culture now, social media now is driving fear up in people. So I think the first natural question, you know, leading into that would be, how do you see people dealing, your patients dealing with the fears of the present moment with so many things going on?
It's been a bit of a paradox. So, you know, my population tends to be very specialized. I focus on people who are going through cancer treatment and their caregivers and with grief and bereavement. So, something actually almost kind of humorous in the first part of the pandemic, late March, April, a lot of my cancer patients were like, you know, I actually feel safer because everybody is now in my world. Everybody's worried about getting sick. And, you know, the ones that were, that had to go out, they were like, you know, finally, I know that people are washing their hands, they're wearing masks. Because, you know, when a lot of people are going through chemotherapy, their immune system doesn't work very well and they can get sick really easily. And it's terrifying to feel horrible with chemotherapy. And then, you know, you have to go out and get groceries or go to the drugstore or something. And there might be some moron in, ahead of you in line who coughs and sneezes on you. And boom, now you have cancer, chemo, and a cold. So a lot of people were actually feeling safer in during the lockdown and the quarantine. And that's starting to change now. You know, people are loosening up. Like you said, it's June in 2020. So we're all over the place in this country now with the quarantine and lockdown. But really for a lot of other people, I think the vast majority of people, as the pandemic started to wash over us, it started to become, I think it was kind of like a cultural trauma that we were starting to participate in. And one of the things that we've understood about trauma is that it tends to be an amplifier and it amplifies whatever's there. For better or for worse, it amplifies whatever's there. And this is kind of what is happening in society on a macro as well as a micro level, is that we're finding that it's amplifying a lot of stuff that's beautiful, but it's amplifying a lot of stuff that's really ugly and that we've been not wanting to look at. And now we're being forced to look at because we're stuck with ourselves. And so it's challenging. It's really challenging for a lot of people. And, you know, one of the things that I worry the most about is people who are trapped in violent homes. They're really trapped now. And it's really, really challenging. And so, you know, we're going to start to see in the next few months and years, long-term consequences of all this. And, you know, for me as a psychologist, what it has been really revolving around is trying to help people manage unfounded fears, or manage fears that are maybe coming from a good place, but aren't actually real threats to existence. You know, one of the phrases I've been playing around with the last couple of weeks is that the opposite of fear is not stupidity, it's information. And so if we can kind of keep ourselves informed, and we don't have to go from, you know, if I wear a mask out in public, I'm just living in fear. So I'm just going to go outside, not wear a mask and not listen to any advice. Well, that's just stupid. You know, that's really just stupid. And you don't have to live in fear to be informed, you know, like, it's like driving a car. It's terrifying when you first get on a highway. You've never done it before. You don't decide you're going to see how fast you can go. You know, hopefully, you know, you make rational decisions. You know, maybe I'm going to stay in the right lane and take the next exit out. And, you know, next time I'll do it a little bit more carefully and maybe we'll go a little further. At least that's how it was.
Do you see this almost like a kind of a psychological denial then too? Is that how you think about it as a psychologist? Like, people don't want to face the fear, so they kind of do these, you know, I don't know, crazy things with it to not have to really look at it?
Well, one of the first things that I learned working with cancer patients is that the human mind is wired for stability. It doesn't give a shit about how happy you are, how healthy you are, how safe you are. It's wired for stability. That's all it wants. And so there's like this, oh my God, this thing is scary. It's unknown. It's unpredictable. What do I do? Quick, act like nothing happened. Like, wait a minute. That's not going to work, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of the opposite of, you know, we'll get to it later on, but it's kind of the opposite of the Frankl thing where you want to sort of face your fears.
Exactly.
Exactly. Run from them, right?
Exactly. 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 And the fears are, you know, it keeps us alive. You know, the last several years, I've started to appreciate how stress and fear, we really kind of think of them as the enemy. They're not our enemy. They're really, really helpful. They keep us alive. They're our survival instincts. And we wouldn't make it far as a species without fear, without this pull for stability, you know, without anxiety and without stress. We would all have been tiger food. Our ancestors would have all been, you know, pretty good meal for some predator. We wouldn't have made it. You know, stress let us know where there was danger. It helped us escape danger. So, you know, it has a role to play, but I'm not sure it should really be the core of our being.
Mm-hmm. I guess that gets to the idea you're talking about with Daniel, with the fear being weaponized against people, right?
Yeah, fear being weaponized, and then maybe even one step back, a broader term like language being weaponized to promote a response. And, you know, as we're kind of thinking about our show, and, you know, Sumit came to mind from his work being a psychologist, like, I have been, well, we all pay attention to media, right? Everybody does. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, part of a daily life. At one point, it, you know, people who watch CNN or Fox were just sort of people who hung out at the house or at like old folk centers. And that was it. You know, it's just news. You turned it on when you needed to know something and then you turned it off, you know? But over the last probably 18, 19 years, I feel like it's certainly become something more of a staple in the people's entertainment. You know what I mean? And in that, it has garnered a much larger place in people's lives and therefore their minds. And as time has gone on, for clickbait, right, for marketing purposes, for eyeballs, because there's a lot more eyeballs to be had and ad revenue behind it, and signaling to people who would potentially be new customers or repeat customers, they, people on the other side of the media, and some of this is social as well as, you know, legacy media, use language in such a way that it's very incendiary and quite polarizing. And I personally believe that it's a detriment to our minds, our well-being on a regular basis, to have everything put in such a way that it drums up the most deepest sort of responses from us, which really is kind of fear. And then the subsequent response to fear often is anger or frustration.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of what I wanted to kind of talk to you about, and Eric as well, is in a day where we have media that is so prevalent in everyone's lives on such a regular basis, how can we, you know, first identify what it is that's occurring to us and, you know, upon us and around us, and then take some, you know, practical tips and things that, you know, you've seen and we've also kind of seen with patients and from a spiritual perspective, and apply that as sort of a relative antidote, you know, some level of clarity to help people, some insight, if we'll use some of our dharmic terms, you know, to kind of help manage and work our way through, you know. So I'll let you, you know, tell me what your thoughts are, and then we'll just kind of bounce it back and forth.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, this is spot on. This has been one of the most crucial things that I've been talking to people about is, you know, you're stuck at home, or if you're stuck at home, limit how much news you're watching. Just limit it. You don't need more than 20 minutes in your life a day. And yeah, there's this primal fear response we have. Our dopamine surges, you know, our adrenaline is rushing. Mm-hmm. We're filled with fear, anger, and disgust. And oh my God, they're about to have a guest on who's going to address those really uncomfortable feelings I'm having now, or is going to activate them even more. You know, like, I got to see what this person's going to say. And now you've just sat through a commercial break, which is the real goal, right? And now you're going to watch what this person has to say. Oh my God, I can't believe he said that. I can't believe she said that. What a moron. What a jerk. Or, you know, they said it exactly the way I want to. Wow, I can't wait to hear what the host is going to do now. And you just sat through another commercial break, which is the goal. Mm-hmm. You can spend hours like that, hours and hours, with, you know, nothing to show for it in terms of your mood, your diet, your lifestyle, your, you know, your spiritual goals, any hobbies you thought you had. Now you're just watching people go down this rabbit hole of primal emotions. So I've been really encouraging people to stay informed, 20 minutes of news, and that's it. You know, with the Black Lives Matter protests that are going on, I think they really highlight the importance that we need to be informed, because if people weren't paying attention, we wouldn't be able to engage in any social changes that I think are to the benefit, personally, I think they're to the benefit of everybody. So, you know, there's a balance between being informed, but then also being ignorant of the toll that it may be taking on you. So again, the opposite of fear is not stupidity, it's being informed, and being informed to the point that it can enable right action with skillful means, you know. And, you know, this is something that I think in the Dharma world is oftentimes ignored. Skillful means applies to ourselves as much as it does to other people. You know, are we using skillful means for ourselves to be informed about stuff, or are we just beating ourselves with cable news, you know, or with clickbait on the internet? You know, I'm certainly guilty of it these days. I'm doing a lot more social media than I feel comfortable admitting to myself. And, you know, I've been thinking about fasting off of that for a while because it's becoming unskillful. It's not a good use of my time. What I do encourage people to do is to cleanse after being exposed to news, you know, really treat it in another setting. I refer to it as, like, you know, I'm from an Indian background. So, you know, I eat chilies with some of my food, try to eat it with all my food, but, you know, you can't have chilies as the main course. It's a little relish on the side. You know, you have like a green chili with your meal. For me, it feels good. It burns. It's invigorating. You kind of want to treat the news like a chili, you know, it's something on the side. You kind of spice up your day with it a little bit, you know, it kind of creates a little excitement, but you eat a bowl full of that, you're going to be messed up. You know, it's not going to feel good. So I kind of try to treat the news or any of those social media things as like a garnish. It's almost like an adornment, but it's not the main thing. You know, it's just one part of the total activity of the day. And so the cleanse afterwards is, you know, coming back to your breath, because this is where stress and fear take root, is to trigger our stress response. And I have yet to meet anybody who can successfully think their way out of the stress response. It has to start with the body. So, you know, doing those breath awareness exercises, belly breathing, You know, whatever works for people, 4-7-8 breathing, box breathing, all these different breathing techniques that we have, of just making sure that your breath is centered, it's skillful. You know, your breath is going to be guiding your activity and your motivation for the day. And it's really easy. You know, you see pictures of politicians you don't like, you see pictures of things going on, and it's like, oh my God, and you can feel yourself choking on your own fear and disgust, you know, not skillful. It's not skillful.
Yeah, no, I think that's I think that the breath part is a great point. I mean, I've been teaching breathwork workshops for the last couple years, actually, as part of my, you know, part of my life mission as well. So I think it's really interesting that you mentioned that. And I, you know, completely agree. It's placing awareness on an unconscious process, mm-hmm. right? Because breath is one of these things that's conscious and unconscious, as are our responses. Right. So if we're influenced by something, we're talking about news or quote unquote media, that it does elicit a response. And sometimes that response is, oh, wow, I'm glad I know that information now so I can do something with it. And the response could also be, oh my, as you mentioned before, like, oh, my gosh, this person is saying this in such a way that is making me angry or making me concerned about the well-being of my family or my neighborhood. You know, but like it's that for most people, and myself included in this, oftentimes that's the end of the internal dialogue.
Right.
And then you just go about to the next thing without taking some time to separate yourself from that. There's no logical conclusion. Right.
Yeah.
And I call him a yogi. His name is Don Dapani. I think he's a teacher. I think he's Indian. I don't really know. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's a Shivite. I don't know. But one of the things he talked about that I found really interesting is that we don't finish things. Mm. People don't finish things. Mm-hmm. So, for example, he's like, you know, when you get up in the morning, it's really important to make your bed because right. that finishes sleep.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's the finish. And so if we consider this as like, you know, being skillful about what we're doing, there's always a beginning, middle, and end to things. And sometimes it's longer or shorter than others. But the finality of our engagement with something like some sort of media should be, or could be, you know, depending on how you want to do it, a moment of clarity or relative clarity, not to dwell on what it is that it's doing to you, but provide, like on the breath, some awareness to an unconscious process, like a reaction to what we've just witnessed.
Yeah. 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 And then, you know, it's counter to the kind of mindlessness of news consumption, which is driving so much of our culture now. And not everybody watches news. We know it's a minority of the population, but it seems to really drive the national conversation. You know, those are the people who are driving society. So, you know, I think, I believe it has a role to play in keeping us informed, but it's also incredibly toxic to have to come up with content that's going to keep people engaged 12, 14, 16 hours a day. You know, like there's so much they could be talking about, but you know, if one station is going to go on fear, it's going to have the highest ratings. It's just the way human physiology works. And so you can't have kind of the feel good channel competing with fear. It's just not going to work. And those are the limitations of human physiology. It's just going to be that way. So we have to kind of adjust what we're doing as viewers and consumers, because the media is going to offer what works for them. You know, that's kind of what they do. That's what any industry will do. They're not going to offer you a broken formula. They're going to do what is successful for them. That's their skillful means, you know. So we have to kind of, we have to adapt what's skillful for us. Is it contributing to that? Or do we pull away and, you know, become aware of our breath and decide that, you know, we're going to learn how to play the guitar, or we're going to spend our time in meditation practice, or we're going to go for a walk, we're going to do other stuff that might be more helpful.
Yeah, Eric and I have this discussion all the time, you know, on the show and then off. The amount of engagement with things in life, right? Like how much is enough? You know, how much is enough to elicit a response from ourselves? And then how do we act upon it? In what way is best for ourselves, our immediate family, and then our community, the earth as a whole? And it's an ongoing debate, wouldn't you say, Eric?
Yeah, there's this kind of like skillful means question you're bringing up to me. Like, how do you interact in a skillful way? So you're not consumed, but at the same time, you're not, I know you're not being negligent in some way. It's like, it's kind of a funny balance of things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, balance is kind of the key, and balance for me, I've come to appreciate it that balance is something that you can either, you can explore it as a steady state or as an average. And for me in my life, I kind of have seen balance as an average. It's something that is not visible in front of me, but it's something that with a kind of wobbly, you know, going up and down, the net effect at the end of the week might be that I averaged out balanced, but it might not have felt like that in the moment, you know? So it's something that I may be kind of orbiting, and kind of on paper objectively, if there's some way to measure it, I may go, you know what, I think I did pretty good in the balance department, but I was super cranky and I was also incredibly relaxed, you know, at various points during the day. So, you know, for me, I think the goal is that we kind of tighten it around that average so we don't have the wild swings, and kind of hover around the average as much as possible. But that's, you know, it's shaky ground. There's some moments that require more engagement and others that don't. And, you know, I'm not sure that anybody can really sustain a high level of engagement and maintain health and well-being. There are some people who obviously can. I think there, for most of us, though, it is picking our battles wisely, skillfully, and, you know, finding the causes that really incite our passion, hopefully not our anger and our fears, but really our passion. I think, you know, one of the teachings of nonviolence is from Gandhi is that I read this and I read this maybe like 20 or 30 years ago. I still have trouble with it. He said something about it being a sincere wish to improve your enemy. So, like you're not motivated by anger or rage about what they're doing as much as compassion for the fact that they're living a very horrible existence. You want to make that better for them. I can't imagine it feels good to have the view of people as inferior or less than yourself, because, you know, it's ultimately a very fear-based way to live. So you're actually trying to free people you don't agree with compassionately. And that's, you know, that's more sustainable than just, I'm just going to smash the system for the next 80 years of my life or something. Like, nah, it's not going to be pleasant. It's not going to be pleasant for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really, I have a 7-year-old and I was trying to explain him things about what's going on. And then as a psych thing, Sumit, I just brought out like the dark triad. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to explain to my 7-year-old, like, you're going to get people who just have this mindset, you know, and, you know, they're going to be a little bit more narcissistic, or they're going to be a little bit more. It's funny to try to hear him say Machiavellian. He kind of like tries to spit that out.
Right.
But, you know, I'm trying to teach him these things. And I looked at the research of that and I was saying to him, you know, like people who have those mindsets, like what you were talking about, they're not happy people.
Right.
Like the research right. shows, the more you have of those traits, the less likely you are to, like, you know, feel personal satisfaction and feel happiness in your life. It's an irony, right?
Yeah.
It's
kind of they're constantly chasing after something that's getting further away from them. You know, the more they try, the more elusive it gets. And, you know, what they may see as happiness is, you know, so many of us confuse happiness with pleasure. So there's certainly plenty of Machiavellian types who have incredible amounts of pleasure in their lives, and they're absolutely miserable. So, you know, I think there's a window there of opportunity that, you know, you want to be really happy, be free. You know, that's really, really challenging. That's actually very threatening to a lot of people, this concept of freedom.